If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT. Really happy to have you back for what is just my fifth show. The background shows you Cardiff Bay. Yes, a beautiful place that I live nearby, and I'm glad that it's here. I'm glad to be in Cardiff from South Wales, coming to you, but going all over the world on TNT. So, over the past few years, we've started a conversation which cannot be stopped. Even though there are significant attempts to censor voices on the independent media, those voices are instead growing in size and scale. Do you understand what is happening? Because this is a revolution, and we are part of it. But when you're hanging around in the eye of the storm, it's hard to notice the storm raging around you. And there is going to be a challenge to the current paradigm. There always is. Every paradigm changes. The people who want you to force you to bow to their every will and whim have to fall on their swords to do so. Many of the people who pushed the experimental medical interventions upon us over the last few years, folks like Devi Shridhar and others, have had to ruin their good names entirely by getting into bed with the beast. They are protected in that way. We can't ignore the lies, provocations, misinformations, and worse anymore. We are not willing to be silent. Loads of people are asking questions, and as more information is public, that will increase. The most important part of this process is that people question what is happening. But how does someone best form their questions? Well, one of the most popular ways to question the official narrative nowadays is by interviewing people. As the answers from the mainstream media have become more detached and distant from reality, more regular people have bought themselves a mic and a webcam and begun their own podcasts. For many people, the mass of new podcasters and commentators appear to be a random melee of folks who want attention. But once you have found your favorite show, then people settle on what they believe the truth to be. And while many interviews will fade into insignificance over time, many others only become more relevant as time passes. As a researcher and a writer, I love to have as much information as possible. I love it. Even more if that information has come straight from the horse's mouth. Some podcasters understand this power and they try to uncover more. Some are just asking questions with a scattergun approach and are not hunting for someone's real intentions. Nowadays, when we look to see what someone who we admire says, folks will type in a name to YouTube or Google, and they will usually watch whatever comes up first. They then judge the subject by the single interview they've initially stumbled upon, and depending on what that person was like on that specific day in which the interview took place, they will forever judge that person to be that way. But humans sometimes change their minds. They can lie, they can mislead, they can be simply having a really bad day. We've all had those. So we need not only to think about the subject who is being interviewed, we also need to understand the true motivations of those who ask the questions, those who inquire, those who lead the conversation, and which way they choose to lead it. This isn't necessarily to simply discover bad intentions, but instead, we should simply be looking for people who are making inquiries for the right reasons, people who want to understand more. In fact, most people who are interviewed lie without meaning any nefarious intentions or having any nefarious intentions. The truth is actually not very easy to describe. It can often be uncomfortable, yucky, or it can lead to someone having to explain how they got to the truth. And in context to the question, the time constraints, and the platform they're on, that explanation might be deemed as inappropriate in some way. Truths are often uncomfortable for some. Truths are often inconvenient. Truths are often mixed in with lies. So to pull the truth out of people is a skill. In fact, it's a skill which the authorities train their representatives in. Have you ever watched a video of a police interrogating a suspect? They use a mixture of body language, carefully worded sentences, approachability, and compassion to get the subject to divulge what they initially want to avoid divulging. The truth is not as simple as you hope it is. You can just ask someone a simple question and expect to get an honest answer. You have to learn to wield your questions, how to push the right mental buttons, and you have to be aware of the consequences. Because a lot of people think they want to know the truth, but once they do, they often regret their desire to know more. Be careful what you wish for, because the truth is uncompromising. You're here with me on the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. Just before we get to an update from our friend Adam Clark, if you missed your favorite TNT show or interview, simply listen back when you want, whenever you want. Just visit the episodes on the TNT website. We are also on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. Now, there's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT. Now, I'd love to speak with Ruckus. Let's swoosh him in.
Getting straight to the facts.
Enough with the lies. We need facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So, the Democrats are doubling down on their criticism of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. after the independent U.S. presidential candidate announced his pick of Nicole Shanahan for vice president Tuesday, arguing that the team-up will benefit former President Donald Trump. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. How are you today, Ruckus? How are you doing?
Feeling my hair's a little windy from all the swooshing in. Thanks, Johnny. Just kidding there. Don't you just love American politics? You can't make this stuff up, right? So the Democrats, they're upset with this guy because he's anti-vaxxer. They're upset with this guy over this or that. They're upset with him because he left the Democratic Party. And now they're upset with his pick. I'm like, he's not running with the Democrats. He's no longer a Democrat. He's independent. What the F do the Democrats care? You know what I'm saying? They're worried because they're all suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. Good old TDS. Man, here we go again with all of this stuff. Ooh, politics, politics, politics. It's so fun. So yeah, they're upset with his selection of Shanahan. In fact, it's not just Democrats. A lot of people are raising eyebrows, mostly because she's the ex-wife of Sergey Brin, who's a billionaire and happens to be the co-founder of Google. So, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. likes to present himself as being an anti-establishment type. So there's an issue with that. But that's a story for another day. Why are the Democrats so upset, other than the Trump thing? Well, let's dig into it. Let's see. So he did announce Shanahan. She is a California-based attorney and a entrepreneur. He's picked her as his VP choice, his running mate, for his bid for president. Excuse me for one second. Cough off camera there. Shanahan does not necessarily bring a wide-reaching name recognition. She's not a household name. She will be soon, I'm sure. She does bring a large amount of money, that's right, wealth to the campaign that political observers have noted she could use to bolster the campaign ahead of November, including its efforts to actually make the ballot in key battleground states where the war is taking place, as it were. The announcement comes as Democrats have voiced other concerns in general that Kennedy's basically siphoning away their votes from their precious Biden in November. Although polls do suggest that it's unclear whether he would be a bigger threat to Biden or Trump at this point for either of their choices at victory. Polls suggest that both Biden and Trump are unpopular. Interesting. And Kennedy is viewed as the independent or third-party candidate with the greatest amount of support, though his stances on issues such as vaccinations and abortion make it more difficult for him to resonate with Democratic voters who are dissatisfied with El Presidente Biden. Shanahan joining the Kennedy campaign could increase Democrats' fears about the campaign. According to a report from the New Republic, which is titled the headline, RFK Jr.'s running mate is young and very rich. That worries Dems. Matt Bennett, according to Newsweek, is a co-founder of the Democratic centrist group Third Way. He told the New Republic, I'm switching too many sources. So this is Matt Bennett, co-founder of the Democratic centrist group Third Way, speaking to New Republic, saying that, quote, anything that divides the anti-Trump coalition is dangerous, end quote, and that her money could be used for, quote, anything, including ballot access, end quote. Uh-oh, you mean democracy in a country that everyone says is supposed to be democratic when it's not, we're a republic. Here's another example. Here we go. Here's the one from Newsweek. Grant Davis Rehar, a professor of political science at Syracuse University, told Newsweek how Shanahan could help Kennedy's campaign make the ballot, but noted these campaign funds may not necessarily translate into support for his campaign. Quote, getting on the ballot, the necessary first step, is something that requires organizing the efforts of others, and that requires money. Per past Supreme Court decisions, our laws are set up to allow unlimited expenditures of personal wealth by candidates. Michael Bloomberg is a good example, and he also shows that money does not necessarily, quote unquote, buy votes either in a primary contest or a general election. He said Biden should be concerned about his independent run as some of his economic policies and his family could win over some Democratic voters. But both parties have shown signs they are concerned about Kennedy, as he may have a message that could, quote, appeal to either party's disenchanted voters, end quote. So I think both sides are scared of Kennedy, Johnny, but what say you?
Oh, I'm not sure anybody wants to hear what I've got to say about Kennedy. I would have a lot to say about Kennedy. I think he is an amazing at putting a PR and marketing spin on himself. I certainly don't think he's the freedom fighter and libertarian that a lot of people pose him as. He's definitely got links with the establishment, whether it's his self or his photos with Rabbi Shumi, whether it's his association with every single person who's unpopular all of the time. And so it's not a surprise that it would be Sergey Brin's wife who comes along. But that, well, to be honest, when you said it, I thought, wow, that's really, you know, I think we'd say in Britain, balls out. It doesn't seem like they care too much about what people think anymore, because they're right. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is going to have a lot of smearing from all sides and from his many associations in the past, including his history with Epstein. So his campaign will be really hard to get further than he is now, I think, but he will appeal to those libertarian, probably most likely libertarian minded people who are either currently voting Democrat or Republican. It makes sense that he'll pull some of the votes away from either side, but most of those votes will come from the Democrat Party. And just to put a cherry on that, I think personally, when I've played Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s rollout, I don't think this is the election year where he's going to get closest. I think that either in 28 or 32, we're going to see the Democrat Party having to have reformed and welcome him back into the fold. And then he will be potentially the front runner for the Democrats. So the Democrats know fully well he's the most dangerous thing for them, because he means complete change for their party.
You know, I would tend to agree with you, Johnny, but my spidey sense keeps tingling. I keep thinking, I think that the world is ready. Well, not the world, sorry. American exceptionalism, forgive me, that the United States, at least, is ready for a third party candidate, which would probably be a, you know, earth shattering type of event with ripple effects all around the world, because that has never happened here. I think that people here, the voters, the public, they're sick and tired of both sides. When it comes down to it, if they're just tired and they don't know who to pick, they just might pick the monkey in the middle and just go with RFK Jr. This might be the time we see a third party candidate become president. You never know.
I like the idea that the system will change. I like the idea of that. I do think that there's always hope in people's heart for this election system to actually somehow, you know, become fair. But I think that each of the candidates have done a lot to distance themselves from the negative histories, and especially the negative associations. Trump did very well on distancing himself from this Democrat kingmaker that was Jeffrey Epstein by switching over to the Republicans. And I think Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is also trying to do a little bit of that as well. And of course, Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, which is so much to say, but it's going to be hard. I think it's going to be hard for every, I still can't see it changing the result. I can still see Trump winning at the end of it.
That does seem to be the playbook that we're running these days, doesn't it? So I'd probably be shocked if it wasn't Trump. But again, I mean, you never know. Stranger things have happened, Johnny.
Indeed. And thank you for that. You're going to come back with us on the second hour, yes, Adam?
Absolutely, my friend. We'll see you then.
Brilliant. Okay, you're listening to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT.
TNT's Jason Allborn.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us. And the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on three separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on three occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Allborn on today's News Talk TNT.
This is generally the view of people. Oh, we don't know much about Assange. But you should know, because whether you know it or not, he is fighting for you.
For your courage and leadership and tenacity in journalism and publishing.
Since 2010, Assange has been held in progressively narrower, darker, colder, and crueler spaces.
He has been detained since the 7th of December 2010 in one form or another.
And we are now here after years of imprisonment.
WikiLeaks is a non-state hostile intelligence service.
I think the man is a high-tech terrorist.
A high-tech terrorist.
A traitor, a treasonous.
He has to answer for what he has done.
Assange faces up to 175 years in prison for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes.
The U.S. government narrative about Julian is a complete fraud. It is a complete fraud from A to Z.
Julian took on the most powerful countries in the world, basically all of them.
We now have confirmed that there were plans to kidnap Julian here in the center of London, or even assassinate him.
No one who instigated that illegal and immoral war has been brought to justice. But the great truth teller sits behind bars.
If wars can be started by lies, peace can be started by truth.
Julian Assange is a hero.
What if everything we thought we knew about somebody was a lie? Would we be willing to go on a new journey of understanding? This is a story of deception, lies, bravery, and a man who risked everything to bring the truth to light.
Mr. Assange shows all the symptoms that are typical for a person that has been exposed to psychological torture over a prolonged period of time.
He looked at me intensely and said, "I hate to say this." He then hesitated, visibly troubled and searching for words. And then he finally said, "Please, save my life."
May future generations have the ability to speak without restraint. May our children and their children know truth and have access to information that leads to justice. Wherever Julian goes, free speech goes with him.
If there is a bird that is about to take flight, stretch her wings and rule the skies, may it be a peace dove and no longer a bald eagle.
If you think Assange is a traitor, he's a rapist, he's a narcissist, he's a hacker, I don't blame you, because you have been deceived. And if you think you've not been deceived, that's normal, because otherwise it wouldn't be deception.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Now we're talking!
TNT.
Welcome back to today's News Talk Radio TNT on the Johnny Vedmore Show. You're watching the Johnny Vedmore Show, and on my first guest today is brilliant, Eric Hunley. He's a completely enthralling podcaster, very specific style. He doesn't just ask questions, but he aims to open up his guests to find a real person who looks beneath the subject's normal veneer. I've enjoyed chatting with Eric on his unstructured podcast a few times. He's done that to me. He's opened me up and got me to speak. But don't let the name fool you, the unstructured podcast. There is method to his madness. And we can learn a little bit of that method just by asking the same sort of like probing questions that maybe he would ask. I don't know if they're going to be as good as Eric's questions, to be perfectly honest, but I'm going to give it a go. Eric, thanks for coming on the Johnny Vedmore Show. How are you today?
Thanks, man. I'm a little bit scared, actually. Who knows?
Really?
No, that kind of lead in, I'm like, no, I'm really a nice guy. I promise.
Yeah, I'll be sort of gentle, honest. I'll be sort of gentle. First of all, right, okay, before we start to talk about style and form, can you explain to the audience a little about your pre-podcast background and what led you to where you are today in this podcast?
I'm as qualified as any person on the planet to start a podcast, as in I like hearing things, I like talking to people, and I wanted to do a show. So in fairness, my background, I was in the military for a minute back in my 20s. Then I went into the corporate world doing IT, web programming, things like that. Got bitten by the bug of listening to podcasts and thought, you know what? I'd like to do a podcast. It took me about 10 years to work up the nerve and actually do a podcast. And ultimately, I started one in 2018, which then became a YouTube series of channels now in 2020. Based on somebody wanting to have a video of them and kind of forcing me into the situation.
Right. But, okay. So when you say like you went into the military and these other and computers, was that just like, because I had the same feeling when I was young? I was just like, I might go and go join the army because I had no idea what to do. Did you have a trouble trying to decide what to do in life then?
I was broke. I was submitting freelance stories to the newspaper, and honestly, $50, you know, every once in a while for a story that gets published and the local paper is not going to survive. My income was, you know, submitting stories and donating plasma twice a week, which I still have a scar on my left arm from all the plasma that has been pulled out of my body when I was before I was 21 even.
Wow. So you really, really paid in blood in that sense. Wow. Okay. Well, you obviously have a very interesting way of asking questions. I've experienced that and quizzing guests. How do you go about opening somebody up properly?
Well, it's funny because I'm not trying to open somebody up per se. I am a naturally curious person. And if I have somebody come on the show, then they have either their own identity or something they have studied or something that they offer. And I'm interested in that. And the number one form of respect I could give is to be interested and to hopefully phrase a question or pay enough attention to what they're saying to be a valuable conversation partner. So I guess I would say in any interview, I'm looking for an early hook. And I know that sounds weird, but I almost want to take them by surprise or knock them on their back foot. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, you've interviewed a lot of people, I'm sure, being a journalist. And you know that when you go in, they have talking points. I used to get sent people by bookers and they would have a list of 10 talking points. I'm like, okay, well, thank you. Now I know that's 10 things I won't ask them. I want to know something about them and have something that's kind of unexpected to where they go, I have to pay attention now. I have to engage because this individual kind of threw me for a loop a little bit. Like, I don't know if this is an effective one, but yesterday, I have an interview coming out today with Norm Pattiz. Now, Norm Pattiz, you guys might not know him on that side of the pond, but he is Alex Jones' attorney. He represented him for Sandy Hook. Alex Jones is pretty internationally known. He also represented the Proud Boys and their trouble with January 6th. And he is a legendary trial lawyer. And he studied under Jerry Spence. Jerry Spence is another legendary trial lawyer who never lost a case. And he was friends with F. Lee Bailey and worked with F. Lee Bailey, another legendary. So these are a particular ilk of person. So how do I go about that? I did have one question kind of preloaded, but Norm Pattiz walks around, he has a ponytail, and you know, he's kind of a rebel, wears tennis shoes in the courtroom. And I was thinking, you know, the guy's almost 70 now, been around for a minute. There was a movie in the late 80s, 1989, called True Believer with James Woods and Robert Downey Jr. The lead character of it was kind of a hippie burnout wearing a ponytail lawyer in the courtroom. So just for giggles, I was like, have you ever seen True Believer? He's like, yeah. I'm like, are you offended that you resemble that character? Now, that's not quite a normal question. I don't think you would, you know, get that if you were doing a media hit on Sky News on your side, Fox News, or, you know, or MSNBC, whatever, any place. I deliberately do that because now it's saying, oh, that's interesting. I study and find little things about him. He has a wonderful story about his time as a child. He had a really, really bad childhood. You know, it's like not everybody gets into their career. They kind of back into it. Just like I backed into podcasting. I backed into the Army. I backed into a lot of other things. I'm very interested in why they back into them. So one of the reasons he's such a fierce trial lawyer is because he had a terrible childhood. Didn't have anybody there for him except for one person. One person he could count on picking him up every other week at 5 p.m. as part of the Big Brothers, Big Sisters program. And this guy would take him home to have dinner with his family. And he might get to see a baseball game and a movie that week. So his whole world is inside out. But there's this one person. Now, to me, he's representing Alex Jones. That's cool. That's awesome. But that story's so important. That person in his life that made the difference helped Alex Jones, helped all these people down the line. So if I can find that story, that to me is more impactful.
Wow. Now, that is a way to put it. And thank you for putting it like that. It's funny you mentioned Alex Jones in the context of interviewing, because I unexpectedly got to, in a sense, interview Alex Jones at the beginning of the year, which is something that I didn't expect I would do. I was on one of the X spaces, the Epstein Files X spaces, and the guys who were running it Someone told me, quick, go into this space. They just started this Epstein file space. Send them your work and go in there. And it turned out that I was the most talkative and the most knowledgeable person in the room because everybody else was just commenting on the case from what they had read. And of course, I've done a lot of research. By the time it was like on the first day, I got to question Rudy Giuliani about something that happened within kind of like offshoot of the Epstein case. But then Alex Jones was in for the next couple of days. And the people who were running rooms messaged me, DM'd me and said, hey, interrupt him whenever you like and lead the conversation with Alex. Because he was off. He was talking about all of the normal things, you know, grind up babies and they're putting them in things, they're showing them up their noses and doing all of that sort of stuff. And everybody's watching his bombast. And I discovered that okay, right, if I want a proper question about Alex Jones, I'm just going to take him back into time. So I asked him about the forming of the Justice Department and the other sort of powerful institutions that kind of really run America behind the scenes, and you saw a completely different Alex Jones come out. I understand completely what you mean by that. You know, if you can touch on the subjects that really someone doesn't necessarily, they're not looking to emote other people on, but they emote themselves from those subjects. That is amazing. So are you a full-time podcaster now?
I am. I guess more of a YouTuber, Rumbler, locals guy, because you have to diversify. And, you know, I get whatever income I can from any direction, and literally was just seeing the tax guy today going, I hope I have an income at the end of all this. But yeah, you that's essentially what I do, is I create.
So you're good at creating, and there's loads of people out there. And I was saying at the beginning, you know, everybody, once they started to realize that the MSM and the mainstream weren't going to tell them the truth about what was really happening, they started asking a lot of questions themselves, and they started buying mics and cameras. What to one of those people who are back where you were, maybe even 10 years before 2018, what's the advice that you give them to make themselves better?
Well, this is going to sound trite, but it's true. Sometimes things that, you know, you hear over and over actually are legitimate. So my biggest piece of advice is talk about something you're going to talk about anyway for free, because you will.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I can see how that would sound right, but it's completely true. If you don't feel somehow connected with an issue, then of course a conversation's go nowhere. I completely agree. So what's your favorite interviews then? Because you've got loads of them. You've got what is it, over 270 interviews, podcasts now?
Probably more than that, because you unlist things, you lose track of it. You know, there are certain standouts there. Favorite, define that. I mean, I love my John McAfee interview, and some of the footage got used for Netflix. So, you know, that's obviously cool. I like my Carol Baskin interview, for those of you who watch Tiger King. That one I'm proud of, because I got her talking about her situation with Don Lewis, her missing husband, for 15, 20 minutes or so, just going into every detail, opening up completely. By the way, that was one of those times that I used a counterintuitive hook to get her in, that I talked about earlier, because she's known for rescuing tigers and wildlife and her husband and all that. I started out the conversation talking about buying real estate properties on the cheap from the courthouse steps and flipping them for money, which was one of her passions. So she loved that. And then I segued into the other stuff, but she was then paying attention at the time. But maybe my favorite interview is from way back. This is a 2018, an adult entertainer. I don't know what to call her. I would say porn star, but she would argue with me that she doesn't consider somebody in porn a star. She kind of does like a BDSM. So yeah, adult stuff. Okay. She gets naked and does things on camera with other people. This person, Jocelyn Stone, has zero filters whatsoever. And it was an interview that it's not on video, it's only audio, but you know, my face was flush and I was just dying laughing the whole interview. because she's so graphic, so open, so forthcoming on everything you could ever imagine. And there was actual value to that too. Like she grew up either Jehovah's Witness or Seventh-day Adventist, and how that reflected into how she got into lifestyle. So it wasn't just a, ooh, what are they doing on the set with the cameras and ha ha ha. But it was, there's so much of an emotional ride with that. I really, really enjoyed that interview. And I like sometimes those interviews that they're not that big, not that many people listen to them, not that many people know them. But they're important to me. You know, I every once in a while I'm doing an interview that matters to me. And while I do care that the audience wants to watch it, I would prefer they did. In a way, I also don't care because I have to be motivated to do this. So every once in a while it's like, you know what? This is for me.
Yeah. Indulge. Awesome. That is a brilliant way to look at it as well. Listen, we're gonna take a quick break at the in a sec, but yeah, thanks for being so honest about all of this, because that's the type of thing. I mean, I really love an interview with somebody who really is someone I want to speak to, and then everything else follows after that. Everybody else will enjoy themselves too. You're listening to today's News Talk TNT.
JDRF's vision is to create a world without type 1 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes community is at the heart of everything JDRF does. We were founded by the type 1 diabetes community. In the main, we are governed by the type 1 diabetes community, we're energized by the type 1 community, and we're accountable to the type 1 diabetes community. It's on their behalf that we exist, and it's on their behalf that we must succeed. JDRF exists to rid the world of type 1 diabetes. It's easy to say, but it's hard to do. So for us, that means rallying all the resources and all the people and all the organisations required to make that a reality as quickly as possible. The world's best researchers, exciting innovative companies, and the passion of the type 1 diabetes community, then delivered through the health system so lives get better every day, day after day, until the day we find a cure. To everybody in the type 1 diabetes community, no matter your age or stage with the disease, whether you were diagnosed recently or a long time ago, we need you to know that we are here working on your behalf to deliver a world without type 1 diabetes as quickly as we can. Thank you to everybody who's supported JDRF in so many ways. You are making our vision of a world without type 1 diabetes possible.
Eggs. You can fry them, scramble them, poach them, boil them, or race them on a spoon. But uncooked eggs can be a risk for food poisoning. To be safe, avoid buying dirty or cracked eggs. Always wash your hands after handling eggs. And if you're concerned, pregnant, elderly, or have a poor immune system, make sure you cook eggs until the yolk starts to firm. Or look for new pasteurized eggs. For excellent eggs, handle them safely.
Cutting through the clutter. This is Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT. Really happy to be here with Eric Hunley, asking him a fair few questions. We've had a fair few conversations now. I've really enjoyed going on your show and being questioned about articles in a way that I don't experience when I go on other people's shows. You obviously want to, I would assume you want to remain pretty impartial, but what's your political leanings? I mean, it's coming up to election season. Are you going to give away your political leanings, or are you going to vote in this coming election?
I'll most likely vote, but I consider myself a lazy libertarian. I actually registered the domain name at one time, lazylib.com, but that's sort of where I lie. I don't like authority very much, but I also am embarrassed by the U.S. Libertarian Party. There is a balance. I'm okay with driver's licenses, really, I promise. You know, I don't mind the fact that you need to get qualified in order to drive your car, because I'm also on the road and I'd like to live to see tomorrow. So I'm kind of in a balance in there where I like a minimalist government, but I understand there has to be some there. Some might call me a constitutionalist. they did a pretty good job.
Yeah. Yep. So libertarian, I can see that there's a large amount of, I think the libertarian sort of movement is growing, or movements are growing, as everybody gets disenfranchised with the rest of politics and realizes that freedom is the way forward. What is what's driving you to do all of this? What's driving? Did you have something in your life that makes you want to understand the truth of others?
I'm just curious. When I was a kid, I would go to the library every week. I grew up a poor kid in the desert of Arizona and really couldn't afford anything. But, you know, they had this godsend called the library, and I'd walk out carrying a stack of books with my arms outstretched to my chin to the car every week. And usually because I could only go once a week, it was like Wednesday, or I think it was Wednesday every week, but by Sunday, I'd have to be rereading half of the books that I had. But I just consumed books. We had the whole Time Life series of books, which I read cover to cover, and they're all worn out about the mammals and the reptiles and whatever. I was a nerdy kid who was very asthmatic, and I lived vicariously through external input, such as books. And as life has gone on, I've got shifted into audiobooks, and I never have time to actually physically read, but I still appreciate these authors. And I was thinking, well, you know, I want the chance to talk to people and ask them the questions. You know, I don't want to necessarily have a filter. I want the opportunity to talk to these cool, smart people like Johnny Vedmore about people in the past in dark days of London.
This is really interesting, because really what another question I want to ask is about when you look at the range of interviews you do, a lot of it is related to spycraft, is related to intelligence operations, is related to intelligence linked programs. Did you always have an interest in that, or is that something that has just seemed, you know, like the most curious? If you're curious, the most curious thing is the thing that you're not allowed to know about.
I like to know what makes people tick. I want to know why. My wife nicknamed me Why Boy. I actually taught at the University of Arizona Extended U without a degree, 25 plus courses over a year. And the way I break down any subject to teach is why. And my thought pattern is that if you know the why, you'll always get to the what. I know that's kind of a weird counterintuitive, but my whole factor in life is, why do they do that? Why do they think this? Why are they that way? And if I have a bearing on a process or person or anything else, I'll know the outcome. And as far as some of what I do, body language, all that stuff, well, as a kid, I was really sickly, and it was important to survival to know if I was going to get my butt kicked by somebody in the next hour. So I started to, you know, just read people. You know, it's like an intuitive thing of, is that a threat? Is it not a threat? Do they actually like me? Are they toying with me? Are they going to take my mulch money? Are they going to help me? And the other oddity was, because I was sick and in Tucson, so it'd be literally 100 degrees plus, and I'd wear a jacket. I was that kind of kid. I was always hanging out with the girls. So I kind of learned a lot about feminine intuition and the way that they communicated as a child. And then I outgrew all of it. So I'm a crazy mixed up person who just wants to know why, brother. I just want to know why.
I feel you. And I feel you, especially with the sort of like relating to, I had two older sisters, so I think I got a much more a vivid experience of like, you know, females growing up than most people my age did, who didn't have that sort of like two very strong-willed older sisters. And yeah, the same, you know, that feeling. I was a very small child. I was tiny. I was a tiny little boy. And so you know, I would always... I would always end up actually being like hanging around with the roughest boy and accept that as long as I could make him laugh and et cetera, then, you know, I was protected as well and we'd have a good time. But you didn't have anything that, I mean, that's very much, it's symbolic of your want to question, of course. Your childhood seems like something where it's really like, was confusing, would you say then?
Sure. I mean, I a lot of it's confusing. I just said I grew up in Arizona. I lived on a ranch and we raised goats and I would milk goats twice a day, but I also went to the richest school in Tucson, Arizona, and all the other students, their parents were university professors, doctors, surgeons, car dealership owners, et cetera. Like these two girls for their 16th birthday got, you know, matching BMWs. I would get shoes from a store here we call Kmart, which was, you know, it had the shoestrings tied together so you couldn't steal it walking out of the store. Very, very low level. And I also smelled like goats every day going to school, because guess what? When you milk the goats, they live in, you know, dust and dirt, you know, whatever. That's where they lay down. And you kind of had that musty animal odor, which did not endear me to a lot of people. I immediately was mocked, made fun of, etc. So a lot of what I do and see is coming from being informed of being on the wrong side of people's opinions or thoughts or judgment, if you will. And one of my goals is to be known as just being kind. I don't think it's a bad thing to just be kind.
Oh, wow. That's a really interesting thing to say. And if something that connects with me heavily is that I want people to, if they walk away with any idea of what I am, it's that I will always open the door for people, let them go first and be gracious to them and always think about other people first. But that got kind of taught to me by my nan more than anybody. I take it you had a close like family in that sense. You had your nans and grampies in your life, yeah?
Not really. That's the weird part is... my mom would try, she quit her job to stay home with me, but most of my life was, you know, get outside, you know, come back for dinner, go play, go away, go read. And, you know, I just go off and read. A lot of my life was informed. I did have my grandmother. She, you know, adored me, and my grandfather, who I really, really loved, good influence. But most of my life, I just is books, you know, is not a ton of personal endeavor, but rather, again, living vicariously through what I read or what I imagined on the page.
Where are you going to go with the podcast? Are you just going to keep on with the podcast, or have you got any other? I mean, I'm sure that after 6 years of doing this, you probably developed other things that you also want to do alongside the podcast. What else is interesting you at the moment?
Well, oddly enough, I just barely got to the point where it's paying my bills. So in fairness, I really see interviewing people that I enjoy and learning as an ends versus a means. I'm a rarity that I don't have ambitions to be on the news per se or be a big name, Larry King or whatever. I would love to have the influence and the money and the freedom to do whatever I want. But every interview I do, I am being both entertained and I am, you know, ideally earning money. So I don't mind where I am. I'm 53 years old, 54 years old. If I do this the next 20 years, I'm okay with that. I mean, every week, every interview, I just told you, I've got that one coming out today, Norm Pattis. That made my whole week. I do that every week. That's that's so fulfilling. What else do I need? I own my house. I own my car. I've got a happy marriage, and I get to meet illuminating, amazing people. I think that that's a fulfilled life.
So how does your wife feel about it? Is she all right about you going around and talking to all these ne'er-do-wells?
My wife doesn't watch anything I do, but it's cool because one of my channels is America's Untold Stories, and we just had a meetup in Youngstown, Ohio, and we had another meetup back in Alabama. And that is probably, I'd say, the other element to it is I actually just love so much to go and meet people who watch my shows in person and get to have a meal with them and talk to them. And it is so fulfilling. I cannot explain how awesome it is. It's a little odd and overwhelming because you're kind of a famous guy. I know that you probably walk in a room and everybody knows you. Hey, Johnny, they know you. And you're like, awesome. You know, I learned the Hollywood trick of nice to see you instead of nice to meet you, because you might have met them before and you don't remember because you're going through a lot of people, but you still are happy to see them. So that's why the nice to see you, which I really love. But it's so fulfilling to just hang out with people who share similar values or different, you know, similar thoughts or similar interests. I mean, like I said, that's riches beyond cash, dude. It really is.
I completely agree. I actually had that same experience. When you say that people know me, well, I don't know if they do. Again, I'm on the censored part of the independent media, and I live in South Wales, and a lot of people in South Wales aren't very interested in anything just getting on with their life. Actually, a lot of people out there, as you know, even where you live, you'll walk around and people will have their head down and they'll be getting on and they won't get eye contact and they won't say hello anymore and all of those things. But I went to the TMT Comcast event last weekend, and yes, people knew me. Yes, I had that experience of that sort of meet up with people who were aware of some of my work, but also who appreciated it. And it was just, it's glorious to be with like-minded people, especially people who they kind of know you already, and you're willing to know anybody. So that sort of moment of meeting of minds is really, really a special one. How often do you do these meetups then?
We've done two ourselves that we put together. And then a third one, we met up at a conference in Dallas, because that channel, we do a lot of JFK assassination coverage. So there we were kind of headliners to somebody else's event. And I'm not sure where, you know, what will be there next. Like, I'm trying to figure out a way to go across the pond and get a chance to meet you in person, and friends like Andrew Gold and Sean Atwood and, you know, other folks that I know there. And I'm like, how do I work this? You know, how do I figure out a meeting or a conference? But yeah, it is so fulfilling. And if that was your first time in it, I could tell you my first time with that, it was almost overwhelming. I was up till like 4 a.m. with my wife with so much adrenaline, the love pump. And I thought about it. I was like, you know what? This is why rock stars get on drugs. This is why people can go into bad life, not always because of negative, but sometimes the positive can be so overwhelming and shocking to the system. And it was much better in Youngstown, because I had that first one, which is, you know, again, it's just overwhelming. There's so much. I'm kind of an introvert. So absorbing all that love is like, wow. Then you start to get used to it. But it doesn't make it any less fulfilling.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I completely agree with the fact that you get pumped up and end up in the early hours of the morning up thinking, wow, that's wonderful. People who are nice to me. Oh, what a wonderful experience that is. So you're going to keep on with this sort of stuff. Now, you're at erichunley.com. Yeah, you just got it simple. You've got the unstructured podcast. But you say about this, do you say it's another channel where you do a lot of JFK stuff?
Yeah, well, I have America's Untold Stories where I do JFK. And then every Friday I have Layback Law, where I have poor taste in friends and have a bunch of lawyers who are buddies. Anyway, so we do a legal panel every week at noon Eastern time with, I mean, a lot of big name YouTube lawyers like Viva Fry, Nate the Lawyer, Nick Ricada, you know, Ricada Law. And I mean, Emily DeBaker's been on there. Just about any YouTube lawyer you've seen that follow Johnny Depp or Kyle Rittenhouse or any of the big stories, they come on. And I'm fortunate enough that they want to hang out with me every Friday at noon. So I'm all over the map.
I'd want to hang around with you every Friday too, Eric. I want to say, you know, it's been a great pleasure to make the acquaintance with you and to be on your show. I think I've been on 3 times now. Long may it continue as well. I'll keep writing interesting stuff. Thank you, Eric Hunley, for being so honest and coming to speak to me about your work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, stay tuned with us on TNT Radio for more news, views, and chat in the second hour of the Johnny Vedmore Show. We have some great guests coming up this week on the show as well. I'm really looking forward to speaking to my next guest, who is actually from my neck of the woods. Remember to share the program around, get involved in the chat, become part of the conversation in today's news talk on TNT.